Okay, now, if everyone listens very closely, they will hear something wonderful. For Krishna will now begin summarizing the entire Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna, in the beginning of chapter 18, asks a question that should sound familiar to each and every one of you. Arjuna said, "O mighty armed one, I wish to understand the purpose of renunciation, tyag, and the renounced order of life, sannyas, O killer of the Keshi demon, master of the senses." Now, in order to emphasize the goal of the whole Bhagavad Gita, which is surrender to Krishna, Krishna is now going to summarize more or less everything that he's already told in the Bhagavad Gita. And he'll begin by summarizing or going over again that question that he's answered on many occasions. The difference or what Krishna is recommending between the renunciation of work and the renunciation of the fruits of his work. Krishna is going to give his prescription in this summary here, his final prescription. Which does he recommend? The renunciation of work, karma sannyas, or karma phal tyag, the renunciation of the fruits of his work. So we all know what Krishna is going to say here. What? Yes. Renounce the fruits of one's work. But this is just one basic step in relationship to Krishna summarizing the Bhagavad Gita and leading us again to surrender to Krishna at his lotus feet. Now, this particular question is interesting. I wish to understand the purpose of renunciation, tyag, and of the renounced order of life, sannyas, O killer of the Keshi demon, master of the senses. So what Arjuna is asking is whether sannyas, or the renounced order of life, and tyag, renunciation, are they the same thing? Are they two words meaning the same thing? Or are they two different words meaning two different things? Is there any difference between tyag and sannyas, or are they the same? And Krishna, or Arjuna, is asking, what is your opinion about this? And also, in reply, Krishna is going to give the opinions of others as well. So we're all familiar with this already, whether one should perform jnana yoga and renounce activities or perform nishkam karma yoga. The second verse, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, "The giving up of activities that are based on material desires is what great learned men call the renounced order of life, sannyas. And giving up the results of activities is what the wise call renunciation, or tyag." So this is the opinion of others. It is the opinion of the wise. The wise calls this renunciation, tyag, the giving up the results of activities, and the giving up activities based on material desires is what learned men called sannyas. So this is not exactly Krishna's opinion. This is the opinion of the learned and the wise. Now, let's see how well you heard. According to this definition or this opinion of the learned and the wise, are tyag and renunciation or tyag and sannyas the same or different? Okay, let's have a show of hands here. All those who think according to this definition they're the same, raise your hand. Similar, but not the same. What are you voting on?
They're not the same.
They're not the same according to this. Thank you very much, Prabhu. The giving up of activities that are based on material desires is sannyas, according to this. Giving up activities based on material desires. It's the giving up of activity. And renunciation is giving up the results of all activities. So they are different according to this. So what are activities based on material desires? Those are the karmakanda section of the Vedas. And tyaga, according to this definition, is giving up the fruit. Now, here's a second opinion. That was the learned and the wise, and in text 3, here are the opinions of others. Some learned men declare that all kinds of fruit of activity should be given up as faulty. So what kind of learned men declare that? Those, the Sankhya, the followers of Sankhya, and the followers of Jnana Yoga, which is the same, more or less, as Sankhya, they say to give up all kinds of fruit of activities should be given up because they're faulty. And why are they faulty? If one is performing karmakanda activities, they are engaging in sacrifices, and maybe they have to kill animals and things like that. So there are faults in these things. So therefore, they should be given up. Yet, other sages, here's a third opinion, maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned. So those are the mamamsas, the karma mamamsas. They say, don't give up sacrifice, charity, and penance. So what is the question, they say, of them being faulty or violent? They are Vedic, and our business is to simply follow the Vedic formulas. This is Shastra, we should follow it. We should never give up these things. Now, after hearing those three opinions, Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will give his own opinion. O best of the Bharatas, now hear my judgment about renunciation. O tiger amongst men, renunciation is declared in the scriptures to be of three kinds. So Arjuna replies here, I asked what is the difference between tyag and sannyas, and your answer is there are three types of tyag. And Krishna said, don't worry, now I'll tell you definitively. Text 5. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. So the acharyas mention in their explanation that as a lotus stem has fibers inside, these three activities have the fiber of jnana, or knowledge, inside. So do these activities, is Krishna's prescription. Do these activities and become purified in the heart, and thereby you will attain knowledge. So that is Krishna's conclusion over here. Do these activities, become purified in the heart, and the result will be beneficial or advancement to knowledge. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of results. They should be performed as a matter of duty, O son of Prita. That is my final opinion. So the opinion that Krishna gives here, because it's his opinion, is superior to the opinions of others that Krishna gave previously. And Krishna explains here that all these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. This is his opinion. And this means that it is not the activity that has to be given up. It is not the activity that causes one trouble. The problem that we have is the consciousness, the false ego, in which that we perform the activity, thinking that I am the enjoyer, and I'm performing the activity, and let me get the fruit and enjoy. So Krishna speaks here of the true standard of tyag being only internal renunciation. Well, at the same time, externally, one should perform one's duty. And this is Krishna's prescription here in the Bhagavad Gita. Do one's duty externally, and internally, one should be completely renounced. So Arjuna, in other words, if he follows this prescription, should fight. but detached from the results. Now, Krishna defined previously tyaga of three kinds, right? He said, I will tell you that tyaga is of three kinds. Now, he's going to define three kinds of nitya sannyasis. This is text 7. And we'll see here, nityatasya, niyatasya to sannyasya, kamano nopapadyate, mohatasya prityagas, tamasa parikitita. So he uses the word tyag and sannyas both in here. And this is giving a hint to Krishna's answer to the question, are sannyas and tyag the same, or are they different? So some opinions were they were different, but Krishna's indication here is that the renounced order of life and renunciation of the fruit of one's work are exactly the same. But now Krishna is going to describe one of those types of sannyas, or so-called sannyas, renunciation of work. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. And what is the result of illusion or acting in illusion? Simply further illusion. So these three kinds of renunciation are going to be described here. And it should be clear by the end that Krishna is recommending one of these three kinds of renunciation. And I'll give you a hint which one. It's not renunciation in ignorance and it's not renunciation in passion. So here, giving up prescribed duties out of illusion is in ignorance. So beware. And anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to have renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. So someone may take sannyas because he's having so many business troubles and his family is giving him so much trouble and his work is so difficult and he finds no happiness in the world in that way. So one may take sannyas and think, what is the use of working hard to get bread? If I come to Vrindavan, I can get so many chapatis to eat and I won't have to work at all and I'll save myself so much trouble. And in that way, someone takes sannyas or acts in a sannyasi way, but this is in the mode of passion and is also not what Krishna recommends. So a person in this consciousness knows that he should do his duty in detachment, but he rejects doing the duty in detachment because it's too hard, it's difficult. Yet, he still wants to get some spiritual benefit. I'll be a sadhu, I'll be a sannyasi. But I don't want to work hard. It's too difficult. O Arjuna, text 9. When one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. So this is what Krishna had recommended in 8.6 when he said, all these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty, O son of Pritha. That is my final opinion. And then Krishna describes, towards the end, the next to, third to last verse in this section, he describes the symptoms of one who is renounced in goodness, because this is what Krishna has recommended. Renunciation as goodness is doing one's duty externally and internally being detached. The intelligent renouncer situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work nor attached to auspicious work, has no doubts about work. So Arjuna asks, but why can't I just renounce both auspicious and inauspicious work? What's wrong with that? Why can't I do neither auspicious work or inauspicious work? That would be very nice. And Krishna's answer is text 11. It is indeed impossible for an embodied being to give up all activities. But he who renounces the fruit of action is called one who is truly renounced. So here, Krishna says, kama pala tyagi satyagiti abhidhyate. It is said that the person who is renounced from the fruits of his activities, he is actually called a true renouncer. So Krishna's opinion here As he'll explain in text 12, for one who has not renounced the threefold fruits of action, desirable, undesirable, and mixed, accrue after death. And most of the fruits of one's action for one who is attached is mixed. It's like the rose with the fragrance and the thorns both. But those who are in the renounced order of life have no such results to suffer or enjoy. So in this verse, which sums up this section, Krishna uses sannyasim and atyaginam and kamanapalam. He describes clearly that tyag, or renunciation, and sannyas, the renounced order of life, where one is detached from the fruits of his work, and renunciation is same, is exactly the same, being renounced from the fruits of one's work. So sannyas and tyaga are defined by Krishna, in his own opinion, as exactly the same. Now, this should sound very familiar to you, this section A, because we've heard about it so many times in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So this sums up, this first section here, sums up all the points on karma from the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Now in the next section, Krishna's going to sum up jnana, or to help us perform activities without being bound. Krishna cites Vedanta, and he analyzes activities, as we'll hear, comprised of five different factors. He's going to describe things in a jnana type of manner so that we can analyze them for the same purpose of detaching us from the fruits of our work, knowing that that we are not our bodies, etc. And he takes it one step further to the perfection of jnana. And what is the perfection of jnana? Yeah, but what's the perfection of Nishkan Karma from the fifth chapter? What brings one liberation? Supasol, correct, exactly. So Krishna's going to explain how one should surrender to the Supasol. Text 13. How one can act. He's going to analyze how one can act without being bound, which is the same point from section A, but from the point of view of jnana. O mighty arm, Arjuna, according to the Vedanta, or Sankhya for that matter, there are five causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. Now Krishna's purpose in explaining these five causes, we'll explain in a moment. Here they are, one after another. The place of action, that's called Adishtan. And the place of action, although if you have your old version of the Bhagavad Gita, it won't say that it's the body, but the body is considered by all the acharyas as the place of action, and it's different from the instruments of action, which are the karanam, the senses, which are parts of the body. When it's talked about the abhishtan or the body being the place of action, it means the entire body, that thing which is held up by the skeleton. The performer is called the karta, or the doer. So who is the performer of material activities? The soul. How could the soul perform material activities? No, the material nature comes later. Anyway, it's described as the false ego. It's the soul reflected in matter, as the false ego. The various senses, that's the instruments, the karanam, the parts of the body. And the many different kinds of endeavor, that's called chesta, the endeavors of the senses. And ultimately, the supersoul, the paramatma, daivi, the supreme. So these are the five factors of action. The supersoul is the one who controls all the others. He is the paramatma is the lord over everything in the material world. And matter does nothing, because matter is inert. And the soul does nothing. But the soul reflects in material consciousness and is called ahankar. This is how the Vedanta describes it. And this is a Vedantic definition. Now, to stress that these alone are the causes of action, Krishna says, whatever right or wrong action a man performs by body, mind, or speech is caused by these five factors. So the super soul, as we know, even sanctions ashastric work, work against the shastra. Therefore, 16, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. So Krishna says that this consciousness of kartaham, I am the doer, kartaham iti manyate, he is thinking, the materialistic person is thinking, kartaham iti manyate, and what is his position? Ahankara vamudatma. He is bewildered by that false ego reflecting within his heart, within his materialistic heart. He's bewildered into thinking that I am the doer. I am the doer means I am the only doer. And this specifically is exactly what binds one in the material world. This specifically is what binds one to the fruits of one's action, either good, bad, or mixed. This concept that I am the one, and we've already heard that in the 16th chapter, described Ishwaraham Aham Bogi Siddaham Balavan Sukhi, that I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, I am perfect, I am powerful, I am happy. But this is just the definition of illusion. It stems from ignorance, ignorance of who we really are. And here we are, so teeny, so insignificant. Even the bug is thinking that he is the doer and the enjoyer. But what can anyone in this world do, actually? So to explain to us, from the point of view of Vedanta, that we are not the big controllers and the big doers, Krishna is saying there are five factors of action. And ultimately, the real sanctioner, who no one can do anything without getting permission from, is the super soul, the Lord in the heart. So one who thinks himself the only doer, he not considering these five factors, is certainly not very intelligent. He's akrita bhutidvan, and he cannot see things as they are. In other words, he is an illusion. But who is, on the other hand, free from reaction? This kind of person who thinks, I am the doer, he is getting sinful reactions or pious reactions for everything that he does. But who is free from reaction? Because Krishna is still making the point of how to become free from reaction. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. So Krishna is telling this for no chance reason to Arjuna, who is poised on the battlefield, and Krishna is asking him to fight and even to kill. Prabhupada explains in the purport. In this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action, but he did not consider the supreme sanction within and without. If one does not know that a super sanction is there, why should he act? But one who knows the instruments of work, himself is the worker, and the Supreme Lord is the supreme sanctioner, is perfect in doing everything. Such a person is never an illusion. Personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness or a lack of Krishna consciousness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Supersoul or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though killing, does not kill, nor is he ever affected by the reaction of such killing. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged. But if a soldier kills on his own personal account, then he is certainly judged by a court of law. Now here, the first two words in 18 in the Sanskrit are Gyanam Gayam. Now what chapter is Gyanam Gayam from? 13. What does Gyanam mean? Knowledge, or the process of knowledge. And Gayam? The object of knowledge, right. So now, because this is summarizing these jnana sections, Krishna is going to say here, he's going to further analyze knowledge of action, rather. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower are the three factors that motivate action. The senses, the work, and the doer are the three constituents of action. And in that way, someone takes sannyas or acts in a sannyasi way, but this is in the mode of passion and is also not what Krishna recommends. So a person in this consciousness knows that he should do his duty in detachment, but he rejects doing the duty in detachment because it's too hard, it's difficult. Yet, he still wants to get some spiritual benefit. I'll be a sadhu, I'll be a sannyasi, but I don't want to work hard, it's too difficult. O Arjun, text 9, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done, and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. So this is what Krishna had recommended in 8.6 when he said, all these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty, O son of Pritha. That is my final opinion. And then Krishna describes, towards the end, the next or third to last verse in this section, he describes the symptoms of one who is renounced in goodness, because this is what Krishna has recommended. Renunciation as goodness is doing one's duty externally and internally being detached. The intelligent renouncer, situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work nor attached to auspicious work, has no doubts about work. So Arjuna asks, but why can't I just renounce both auspicious and inauspicious work? What's wrong with that? Why can't I do neither auspicious work or inauspicious work? That would be very nice. And Krishna's answer is text 11. It is indeed impossible for an embodied being to give up all activities. But he who renounces the fruit of action is called one who is truly renounced. So here, Krishna says, karma pala tyagi satyagiti abhidhyate. It is said that the person who is renounced from the fruits of his activities, he is actually called a true renouncer. So Krishna's opinion here, as he'll explain in text 12, for one who is not renounced, the threefold fruits of action, desirable, undesirable, and mixed, accrue after death. And most of the fruits of one's action for one who is attached is mixed. It's like the rose with the fragrance and the thorns both. But those who are in the renounced order of life have no such results to suffer or enjoy. So in this verse, which sums up this section, Krishna uses sannyasim and atyaginam and kamanapalam. He describes clearly that tyag, or renunciation, and sannyas, the renounced order of life, where one is detached from the fruits of his work, and renunciation is same, is exactly the same, being renounced from the fruits of one's work. So sannyas and tyaga are defined by Krishna in his own opinion as exactly the same. Now, this should sound very familiar to you, this section A, because we've heard about it so many times in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. So this sums up, this first section here, sums up all the points on karma from the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Now in the next section, Krishna is going to sum up jnana, or to help us perform activities without being bound. Krishna cites Vedanta, and he analyzes activities, as we'll hear, comprised of five different factors. He's going to describe things in a jnana type of manner so that we can analyze them for the same purpose of detaching us from the fruits of our work, knowing that we are not our bodies, etc. And he takes it one step further to the perfection of jnana. And what is the perfection of jnana? Yeah, but what's the perfection of Nishkan Karma from the fifth chapter? What brings one liberation? Supasaul, correct, exactly. So Krishna is going to explain how one should surrender to the Supasaul. Text 13. How one can act is going to analyze how one can act without being bound, which is the same point from section A, but from the point of view of Gyan. Almighty Om, Arjun, according to the Vedanta, or Sankhya for that matter, there are five causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. Now Krishna's purpose in explaining these five causes, we'll explain in a moment. Here they are, one after another. The place of action, that's called Adishtan. And the place of action, although if you have your old version of the Bhagavad Gita, it won't say that it's the body. But the body is considered by all the acharyas as the place of action. And it's different from the instruments of action, which are the karanam, the senses, which are parts of the body. When it's talked about the abhishtan, or the body, being the place of action, it means the entire body, that thing which is held up by the skeleton. The performer is called the karta, or the doer. So who is the performer of material activities? The soul. How could the soul perform material activities? No, the material nature comes later. Anyway, it's described as the false ego. It's the soul reflected in matter, as the false ego. The various senses, that's the instruments, the karanam, the parts of the body. And the many different kinds of endeavor, that's called chesta, the endeavors of the senses. And ultimately, the supersoul, the paramatma, daivi, the supreme. So these are the five factors of action. The supersoul is the one who controls all the others. He is the paramatma is the lord over everything in the material world. And matter does nothing, because matter is inert. And the soul does nothing. But the soul reflects in material consciousness and is called ahankar. This is how the Vedanta describes it. And this is a Vedantic definition. Now, to stress that these alone are the causes of action, Krishna says, whatever right or wrong action a man performs by body, mind, or speech, it's caused by these five factors. So the supersoul, as we know, even sanctions ashastric work, work against the shastra. Therefore, 16, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. So Krishna says that this consciousness of kartaham, I am the doer. Kartaham iti manyate. He is thinking, the materialistic person is thinking, kartaham iti manyate. And what is his position? Ahankara vimudatma. He is bewildered by that false ego reflecting within his heart, within his materialistic heart. He's bewildered into thinking that I am the doer. I am the doer means I am the only doer. And this specifically is exactly what binds one in the material world. This specifically is what binds one to the fruits of one's action, either good, bad, or mixed. This concept that I am the one, and we've already heard that in the 16th chapter, described Ishwaraham aham bogi, Siddham balavan suki, that I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, I am perfect, I am powerful, I am happy. But this is just the definition of illusion. It stems from ignorance of who we really are. And here we are, so teeny, so insignificant. Even the bug is thinking that he is the doer and the enjoyer. But what can anyone in this world do, actually? So to explain to us, from the point of view of Vedanta, that we are not the big controllers and the big doers, Krishna is saying there are five factors of action. And ultimately, the real sanctioner, who no one can do anything without getting permission from, is the supersoul, the Lord in the heart. So one who thinks himself the only doer, he, not considering these five factors, is certainly not very intelligent. He's akrita bhutidvan, and he cannot see things as they are. In other words, he is an illusion. But who is, on the other hand, free from reaction? This kind of person who thinks, I am the doer, he is getting sinful reactions or pious reactions for everything that he does. But who is free from reaction? Because Krishna is still making the point of how to become free from reaction. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. So Krishna is telling this for no chance reason to Arjuna, who is poised on the battlefield, and Krishna is asking him to fight and even to kill. Prabhupada explains in the purport. In this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action, but he did not consider the supreme sanction within and without. If one does not know that a super sanction is there, why should he act? But one who knows the instruments of work, himself is the worker, and the Supreme Lord is the supreme sanctioner, is perfect in doing everything. Such a person is never an illusion. Personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness or a lack of Krishna consciousness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Supersoul or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though killing, does not kill, nor is he ever affected by the reaction of such killing. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged. But if a soldier kills on his own personal account, then he is certainly judged by a court of law. Now here, the first two words in 18 in the Sanskrit are Gyanam Gayam. Now what chapter is Gyanam Gayam from? 13. What does Gyanam mean? Knowledge, or the process of knowledge. And Gayam, the object of knowledge, right. So now, because this is summarizing these Jnana sections, Krishna is going to say here, he's going to further analyze knowledge of action, rather. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower are the three factors that motivate action. The senses, the work, and the doer are the three constituents of action. So here, that ends Krishna's analysis of jnana, or how to become free from work from the point of view of jnana and surrendering to the Supersoul, not thinking oneself as the doer. Now, Krishna is going to explain the result, a resultant understanding. If one doesn't think himself the doer, but yet so much is being done, so who is doing all that? Or what is doing all that? Or who is doing all that? So who is doing it? It's Krishna through the demigods, through the modes of material nature. So it's the gunas, the three modes of material nature, who are making all these works get done. Although one is thinking himself the doer, but it's actually the modes of material nature that are doing everything. So now, in the next section, Krishna is going to summarize in 19 through 40, a long section. Krishna summarizes how the five factors of action, if one is a materialist, it is not pure, how they are dictated all by the modes of material nature. So first he's going to speak about actions, knowledge, action, and performers of action. According to the three modes of material nature, so again, this section describes that if one is not the doer, who is doing? The Supersoul is sanctioning, but who is actually doing? So the modes of material nature are doing. So to show us that, how everything is controlled by the modes of material nature, Krishna begins to explain. According to the three different modes of material nature, there are three kinds of knowledge, action, and performer of knowledge. Now hear of them from me. That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all living entities, though they are divided into innumerable forms, you should understand to be in the mode of goodness. That knowledge by which one sees that in every different body There is a different type of living entity you should understand to be in the mode of passion. And that knowledge by which one is attached to one kind of work is the all-in-all. Without knowledge of the truth, and which is very meager, is said to be in the mode of darkness. That action which is regulated, and which is performed without attachment, without love or hatred, and without desire for fruit of results, is said to be in the mode of goodness. Now, note this purport, because we've already heard in this chapter how Krishna is recommending action or renunciation to be done in the mode of goodness. But see how closely Prabhupada in the purport equates the mode of goodness exactly with Krishna consciousness. Because if one is acting in Krishna consciousness, generally he will simply act in the mode of goodness. That is his basic mode of action. Once, actually, the first question I ever asked Prabhupada, this will be redundant if you read the Elevation to Goodness essay in the back of your book, but at a Sunday feast at 26 Second Avenue in early 1968, it was actually when Jayadvaita Swami was initiated. And Prabhupada gave a lecture, and he was talking about Prahlad Maharaj, and I had been chanting for a few months. So, of course, I was extremely wise by that time, just by the power of the Maha Mantra, and I knew everything. So, during the lecture, Prabhupada said that the devotees were in the mode of goodness. So, at the end of the lecture, I raised my hand and said, excuse me, or something, because it was absurd that I was... It was challenging. And Prabhupada answered, yes, devotees are transcendental to the mode of goodness, but generally they act in the mode of goodness. Because that's the natural, that's what Prabhupada said, that's the natural simple consciousness of the devotee. So we should know this, that the position to transcend from and the position a devotee will naturally act in is this mode of goodness. Regulated occupational duties, here's the purport, as prescribed in the scriptures in terms of the different orders and divisions of society, performed without attachment or proprietary rights, and therefore without any love or hatred, and performed in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the Supreme, without satisfaction or self-gratification, are called actions in the mode of goodness. But action performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and enacted from a sense of false ego is called action in the mode of passion. That action performed in illusion, in disregard of scriptural injunctions, and without concern for future bondage or for violence or distress caused to others is said to be in the mode of ignorance. One who performs his duty without association with the modes of material nature, without false ego, with great determination and enthusiasm, and without wavering in success or failure, is said to be a worker in the mode of goodness. Purport. A person in Krishna consciousness is always transcendental to the material modes of nature. He has no expectations for the results of the work entrusted to him, because he is above false ego and pride. Still, he is always enthusiastic till the completion of such work. He does not worry about the distress undertaken. He is always enthusiastic. He does not care for success or failure. He is equal in both distress and happiness. Such a worker is situated in the mode of goodness. Again, Prabhupada almost equates the two. On the other hand, the worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, and who is greedy, always envious, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion. The worker who is always engaged in work against the injunctions of the scripture, who is materialistic, obstinate, cheating, and expert in insulting others, and who is lazy, always morose and procrastinating, is said to be a worker in the mode of ignorance. So this point about ignorance, as it said before also in a previous shloka, that ignorance will be against the shastra. And here, the worker who is in ignorance, he's materialistic, he's obstinate. He's cheating. He's expert in insulting others. He is lazy, morose, and procrastinating. This is the symptoms of one who works, or rather doesn't work, in the mode of ignorance. O winner of wealth, now please listen as I tell you in detail of the different kinds of understanding and determination according to the three modes of material nature. So one is working and he's thinking that, oh, look at the work that I'm doing. But actually it's the modes of material nature that are binding him and whipping him and forcing him to work in a particular way. So the same point is true about determination, about understandings and knowledge. So one who is not Krishna conscious, he is simply being defeated and forced to act by the modes of material nature. O son of Prita, that understanding by which one knows what ought to be done and what ought not to be done, what is to be feared and what is not to be feared, what is binding and what is liberating, is in the mode of goodness. O son of Prita, that understanding which cannot distinguish between religion and irreligion, between action that should be done and action that should not be done, is in the mode of passion. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion, under the spell of illusion and darkness, and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. O son of Prita, that determination which is unbreakable, which is sustained with steadfastness by yoga practice, and which thus controls the activities of the mind, life, and senses, is determination in the mode of goodness. But that determination by which one holds fast the fruit of results in religion, economic development, and sense gratification is of the nature of passion, O Arjuna. And that determination which cannot go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, moroseness, and illusion, such unintelligent determination, O son of Prita, is in the mode of darkness. O best of the Bharatas, now please hear from me about the three kinds of happiness by which the conditioned soul enjoys and by which he sometimes comes to the end of all distress. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So this mode of goodness, happiness, is what we were hearing, and the activities of mode of goodness is what we were hearing yesterday when we heard about chapter 17, how one can become elevated in the tree of material life, and the purpose of becoming elevated is ultimately liberation. So if one takes to the mode of goodness, one will gradually be elevated, and the result of that will be that he'll have an opportunity for liberation. So that is the ultimate fruit of the mode of goodness, is liberation. That happiness, which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects, and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of passion. And that happiness, which is blind to self-realization, which is delusion from beginning to end, and which arises from sleep, laziness, and illusion, is said to be of the nature of ignorance. So here, the conclusion of the section, because we should keep in mind this tree of material life that we drew yesterday, this banyan tree, which is all-pervading within the material world, and nothing, no situation exists in this world other than being in this banyan tree, different mixtures of the modes of material nature. So Krishna explains this here. There is no being existing, either here or among the demigods in the higher planetary systems, which is freed from these three modes born of material nature. So, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, that the modes of material nature are determining all activities, high, low, medium, and in between, in each of the planetary systems, throughout the entire universe. And they are doing everything in one sense. But again, they are inert, so they're not doing anything. But they are doing everything. Okay, now, this is an interesting section coming up. And starting very soon, I don't know whether to say it starts here or starts at the end of this section or the beginning of the next section. After describing in the first two sections how to get free from the reactions of work, and then describing in this section how everything is simply controlled by the modes of material nature, and people and everyone is forced to work according to these modes, now Krishna is going to explain how to gain liberation. He's going to start climbing the yoga ladder right now in his description. He's going to go from the bottommost rungs to the topmost rungs of the yoga ladder. I'm starting now, but it really starts picking up steam at the end of this section. But right here, Krishna is going to describe how, although one is in the modes of material nature, one can transcend those modes using the work that is controlled by those modes. Follow? Krishna just described how everything in this world is controlled, all activities are controlled by the modes. So therefore the question is, how can one get out? Because everything I do is controlled by the modes. So here Krishna is going to describe specifically that, how one can get out of the modes of material nature using the work, using work according to those modes. So if we remember the bottom rungs of the yoga ladder, there is sakkarma, sakkama karma yoga, wherein one works with fruit of desires. He has desires, but he's working according to Shastra. Now that means that he's working, his prescribed duty is prescribed according to his vana and ashrama. So here, this, where one is attached to work and the fruits of one's work in the modes of material nature, how to get free by following Vanashrama is described. Clear? Do you see the connection between this chapter and this section and the last section? Yeah. Yes? Anyone not clear on that? And then the two sections before that, describing how to become free through detached work, and then through jnana, where one understands he's not doing anything. And then if one is not doing anything, the third section is who is doing the modes, and in the fourth section, how to become free from the modes of material nature using the modes of material nature.
So this third section is sort of a summary of the 14th chapter?
14th chapter and also 17th chapter.
Third section, up to verse 4.
Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras are distinguished by the qualities born of their own natures in accordance with the material modes, O chastiser of the enemy. Now, Krishna will explain the modes and work of Brahmins, actually the qualities of the Brahmins. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the Brahman is worked. Heroism, power, determination, resourcefulness, courage in battle, generosity and leadership are the natural qualities of work for the Kshatriyas. Farming, cow protection, and business are the natural work for the Vaishyas, and for the Shudras there is labor and service to others. By following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. Now please hear from me how this can be done. So what does perfect mean? Perfect means becoming freed from the reactions to his work and becoming freed from the modes of material nature. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. It is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. So here is what Krishna is talking about. How to do work in the service of the Lord according to one's nature And one won't attain any sinful reactions by doing this work. So again, how to become free from sinful reactions? Through working. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. So Krishna here is telling Arjuna plainly that he should fight. Yes, Krishna is saying, there may be some fault. There is fault in what you're going to be doing. You're going to have to be killing so many people. Yes, from one point of view, that is looked at as very faulty. Relatives killing, friends killing, destruction of family. But one should not give up the work born of his own nature. Rather, one should worship the Lord through that work. And I am telling you directly, you should fight. So therefore, you should fight. So, even though superficially Arjuna was saying it's better for me to live like begging, by begging, and that there's no killing involved in begging, Prabhupada explains in the purport. There's no killing involved in begging, so therefore it seems superficially to be a better occupation. But Krishna is explaining here, it's better to do your own work, your own duty, rather than to perform the duty of others. Now, I think we'll stop here. We'll stop a little early tonight. And just... Mr. Ingananda.
I have a question, but it's from the chapter 13.
Okay, now... Okay, I'll get out my chapter 13.
So it's just on the process of knowledge.
The process of knowledge, yes.
Because they say the process of knowledge is to know the Sutra song.
Is what?
But they say it's to know, because knowledge is actually to know the Sutra song, the relationship with the material nature, the relationship between.
Knowledge, as described in the first, the second section, or the first section, where Krishna describes, after Arjuna asks this question, when Krishna starts asking them about Kshatriya and Kshatriya, so Krishna immediately says that to know the Kshatriya is the material body and the two Kshatriya is the soul and the super soul, that is knowledge. Then further, a little later, he describes knowledge as the process of knowledge as well. Yeah, both are right. Is what?
This first definition is was answered in
the beginning. Yeah, it's right in the beginning. To know Chetan and Chetragya, the two Chetragyas, that is called knowledge. And then he describes the process of knowledge.
I was confused because section C, they say,
answer the question. Yeah, well, Krishna says right in verse 3, O sign of Bharati, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. Any other questions? Mataji?
I was just wondering if you could go through...
What? Louder?
I was wondering if you could go through the chapter links from 13 to 18.
Okay. I'll also be giving you some sheets on that. I don't have them right now, but I'll try to get them to you by... If you come to my room or Arjuna's room at somewhere around 12 before lunch or directly after lunch, we should have him by then. We'll try our best to have him. Otherwise, it'll be too late. You might as well not give him out. but let me ask you. Let's see who remembers these things. Okay, what's the link between 13? What is 13 about?
Nature and
joy. But what is it about? Describing what?
Six topics. Prakriti, Purusha, Kshetra, Kshetraya, Yana, Gyan.
Right. Now, in 13.22, when describing the connection between the soul and the soul and the material body, Krishna says, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunkti Prakriti Janiha Karanam Guna Sangasya Sarasa Joni Janmasu. So he explains in that chapter, in that verse, that the connection between the Chetan and Chetragya is these modes of material nature. Or the Prakriti and Purusha is the modes of material nature. So therefore, he, in chapter 14, describes right in the beginning that there is actually no, that there are two, they're dissimilar items, the soul and the soul and the body, but they are connected by the three modes of material nature, right? And then at the end of 14, or most of 14, Krishna describes the three modes of material nature. Then in 15, Krishna describes the banyan tree, and showing again how one situation on high on the tree or low on the tree depends on the modes of material nature. And then the low on the tree is described in chapter 16. And then the divisions of faith in 17 are described, how one has to know that, or in 16, and also that one of the important conclusions is that what brings one lower on the tree is not, is the same point that we just heard, is not following the Shastra. That will degrade one and bring one down into ignorance. By definition, that's ignorance. Then in 17, describes faith and how one needs a transcendental objective, and one can gradually go up by goodness or become degraded by passion and ignorance. But all three of those have flaws. But if one fixes his consciousness on the transcendental through Om Tat Sat and performs his activities for Om Tat Sat, for Krishna, then all flaws are removed. The flaws that are there from goodness, passion, ignorance. But that sheet will describe it in more detail that I'll give you. In 16, the divine and the demonic nature is described. Then, excuse me? And in 17, Krishna asks, or the question could be asked, if those who follow the Vedas are divine and those who don't follow are called demoniac, right? But what happens if someone follows and they have faith, but it's not in the Shastras? Are they divine? Are they demonic? What are they? So what is the answer? That their faith determines, their faith is determined, and their position is determined by the modes of material nature. But whatever, the conclusion is, whatever modes of material nature one is being dictated by, there is fault in it. So therefore one should have a transcendental objective to his work and work to please the Supreme.
Just a little question about the title of one verse is in chapter 15, verse 6.
Chapter 15, verse 6. Yes.
So Krishna, he spoke about electricity. So what's about that? There is electricity
in the spiritual world?
Because
the word is pavaka, or fire. Fire, subtle fire is pavaka.
Because we understand that electricity is discovered, I mean, I don't know exactly, but very recently.
Yes. So actually it's subtle fire. There is no need of sunlight or moonlight or any type of subtle fire that allows us to see, because the spiritual world is chit shakti. It's luminous by itself. So there's no need. It's because nowadays, if we didn't translate it like that, if there's no need of sunlight or moonlight, we still may think there's still need of electricity. So Prabhupada very kindly translated pavaka, or the subtle fire, as electricity, so we'd understand there's no need of electricity either. And it's better to go there. That means you don't have to pay any electric bills. Just how easy your life will be.
Is the connection between the 15th chapter and the 16th chapter, these verses, at the end of like the 17th, 17th verse of the 15th chapter.
The 17th verse of the 15th chapter.
That's the two divisions, fallible and infallible.
Yes, so those are the. Remember, those are the summary of the of Vedanta and Bhagavad Gita. Those three verses are very important. Those three verses. So you're asking about the connection?
So the connection, the three verses are connected, the leading connection into the 16th chapter?
Well, how do they lead to the 16th chapter?
Describing this world, there are two types of living entities, fallible and infallible. So that leads the discussion in the 16th chapter about the divine and demonic natures, the fallible and infallible natures. I'm trying to understand the connection between the 15th chapter and the 16th chapter. I thought maybe those verses show the way.
Well, see, Prabhupada explains here. In the beginning of the 15th chapter, the banyan tree of this material world was explained. This is from the first sloka of chapter 16. The extra roots coming out of it were compared to the activities of the living entity, some auspicious, some inauspicious. In the 9th chapter, also, the devas are godly and the asuras, the ungodly or demons, were explained. Now, according to Vedic rites, activities in the mode of goodness are considered auspicious for progress on the path of liberation. And such activities are known as Daivi Prakriti, transcendental by nature. Those who are situated in the transcendental nature make progress on the path of liberation. For those who are acting in the passion and ignorance, on the other hand, there is no possibility of liberation. Either they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend amongst the species or animals, even lower life forms. In this 16th chapter, the Lord explains both the transcendental nature and its attendant qualities, and the demoniac nature and its qualities. He also explains the advantages and disadvantages of these qualities. So it places one, this chapter places one on the banyan tree of material life. What does it mean to have divine qualities and go up? And what is the nature of demonic qualities that will drive one down? So the conclusion of the 16th chapter is act according to the Shastra and avoid those three gates leading to hell. Even if you have divine qualities and tendencies, avoid lust, anger, and greed. Because those are the three main demonic qualities that will drive one down, down, down. So this again has to do with the coming from the banyan tree example.
So that means from the 15th chapter it just explains how to get free from the tree.
From
15 down it just explains how to get free from the banyan tree.
From 1 to 18 it describes how to get free from the banyan tree.
So it's the second verse. Kamanu bandhi manusha loka
vekars. It's the second verse? It's the second verse? What's the second verse?
That's the connection to the 16th chapter. The second verse of the 15th chapter.
I just read what Prabhupada said. It's pretty clear, isn't it? There's the banyan tree, and here is the position going up on the banyan tree and going down. What qualities that will bring one up and qualities that will bring one down.
So just the three the first okay, why are we the three first?
Because that explains, that's the summary of Vedanta. And one who knows this, one who has knowledge of this, without doubting, he is said to be the knower of everything. Is that the fourth verse? Yomam eva masamudha, janati purushottama. So one who knows that, so one who knows Vedanta, asamudha, without doubting, who knows these three different purushas, he will actually worship Krishna. And this is the most confidential. Hare Krishna.